Chapter 7 Shadows and Tall Trees. The pig run kept close to the jumble of rocks that lay down by the water on the other side, and Ralph was content to follow Jack along it. If you could shut your ears to the slow suck down of the sea and boil of the return, if you could forget how dun and unvisited were the ferny coverts on either side, then there was a chance that you might put the beast out of mind and dream for a while. The sun had swung over the vertical, and the afternoon heat was closing in on the island. Ralph passed a message forward to Jack, and when they next came to fruit, the whole party stopped and ate. Sitting, Ralph was aware of the heat for the first time that day. He pulled distastefully at his grey shirt, and wondered whether he might undertake the adventure of washing it. Sitting under what seemed an unusual heat even for this island, Ralph planned his toilet. He would like to have a pair of scissors and cut this hair. He flung the mass back, cut this filthy hair right back to half an inch. He would like to have a bath, a proper wallow with soap. He passed his tongue experimentally over his teeth and decided that a toothbrush would come in handy too. Then there were his nails. Ralph turned his hand over and examined them. They were bitten down to the quick, though he could not remember when he had restarted this habit, nor any time when he indulged it. "Be sucking my thumb next." He looked round furtively. Apparently no one had heard. The hunters sat, stuffing themselves with this easy meal, and trying to convince themselves that they got sufficient kick out of bananas and that other olive-grey, jelly-like fruit. With the memory of his sometime clean self as a standard, Ralph looked them over. They were dirty, not with the spectacular dirt of boys who have fallen into mud or been brought down hard on a rainy day. Not one of them was an obvious subject for a shower, and yet, hair much too long, tangled here and there, knotted round a dead leaf or a twig, the faces cleaned fairly well by the process of eating and sweating, but marked in the less accessible angles with a kind of shadow. Clothes, worn away, stiff like his own, with sweat, put on not for decorum or comfort, but out of custom, the skin of the body scurfy with brine. He discovered, with a little fall of the heart, that these were the conditions he took as normal now, and that he did not mind. He sighed and pushed away the stalk from which he had stripped the fruit. Already the hunters were stealing away to do their business in the woods or down by the rocks. He turned and looked out to sea. Here, on the other side of the island, the view was utterly different. The filmy enchantments of mirage could not endure the cold ocean water, and the horizon was hard, clipped blue. Ralph wandered down to the rocks. Down here, almost on a level with the sea, you could follow with your eye the ceaseless, bulging passage of the deep-sea waves. They were miles wide, apparently not breakers or the banked ridges of shallow water. They travelled the length of the island with an air of disregarding it and being set on other business. They were less a progress than a momentous rise and fall of the whole ocean. Now the sea would suck down, making cascades and waterfalls of retreating water, would sink past the rocks and plaster down the seaweed like shining hair. Then, pausing, gather and rise with a roar, irresistibly swelling over point and outcrop, climbing the little cliff, sending at last an arm of surf up a gully, to end a yard or so from him in fingers of spray. Wave after wave, Ralph followed the rise and fall, until something of the remoteness of the sea numbed his brain. Then gradually, the almost infinite size of this water forced itself on his attention. This was the divider, the barrier. On the other side of the island, swathed at midday with mirage, defended by the shield of the quiet lagoon, one might dream of rescue. But here, faced by the brute obtuseness of the ocean, the miles of division, one was clamped down, one was helpless, one was condemned, one was... Simon was speaking almost in his ear. Ralph found that he had rock painfully gripped in both hands, found his body arched, the muscles of his neck stiff, his mouth strained open. "You'll get back to where you came from." Simon nodded as he spoke. He was kneeling on one knee, looking down from a higher rock which he held with both hands. His other leg stretched down to Ralph's level. Ralph was puzzled and searched Simon's face for a clue. "It's so big, I mean..." Simon nodded. "All the same, you'll get back all right." "I think so, anyway." Some of the strain had gone from Ralph's body. He glanced at the sea and then smiled bitterly at Simon. "Got a ship in your pocket?" Simon grinned and shook his head. "How'd you know, then?" When Simon was still silent, Ralph said curtly, "You're batty." Simon shook his head violently, till the coarse black hair flew backwards and forwards across his face. "No, I'm not. I just think you'll get back all right." For a moment, nothing more was said. Then they suddenly smiled at each other. Roger called from the coverts, "Come and see." The ground was turned over near the pig run, and there were droppings that steamed. Jack bent down to them as though he loved them. "Ralph, we need meat, even if we are hunting the other thing." "If you mean going the right way, we'll hunt." They set off again, the hunters bunched a little by fear of the mentioned beast, while Jack quested ahead. They went more slowly than Ralph had bargained for, yet in a way he was glad to loiter, cradling his spear. Jack came up against some emergency of his craft, and soon the procession stopped. Ralph leaned against a tree, and at once the daydreams came swarming up. Jack was in charge of the hunt, and there would be time to get to the mountain. Once, following his father from Chatham to Devonport, they had lived in a cottage on the edge of the moors. In the succession of houses that Ralph had known, this one stood out with particular clarity, because after that house he had been sent away to school. Mummy had still been with them, and Daddy had come home every day. Wild ponies came to the stone wall at the bottom of the garden, and it had snowed. Just behind the cottage there was a sort of shed, and you could lie up there watching the flakes swirl past. You could see the damp spot where each flake died. Then you could mark the first flake that lay down without melting, and watch the whole ground turn white. You could go indoors when you were cold, and look out of the window, past that bright copper kettle and the plate with the little blue men. When you went to bed, there was a bowl of cornflakes with sugar and cream. And the books, they stood on the shelf by the bed, leaning together, with always two or three laid flat on top, because he had not bothered to put them back properly. They were dog-eared and scratched. There was the bright, shining one about Topsy and Mopsy that he never read, because it was about two girls. There was the one about the magician, which you read with a kind of tied-down terror, skipping page 27 with the awful picture of the spider. There was a book about people who had dug things up, Egyptian things. There was the boy's book of trains, the boy's book of ships. Vividly they came before him. He could have reached up and touched them, could feel the weight and slow slide with which the mammoth book for boys would come out and slither down. Everything was all right. Everything was good-humoured and friendly. The bushes crashed ahead of them. Boys flung themselves wildly from the pig track and scrabbled in the creepers, screaming. Ralph saw Jack nudged aside and fall. Then there was a creature bounding along the pig track towards him, with tusks gleaming and an intimidating grunt. Ralph found he was able to measure the distance coldly and take aim. With a boar only 5 yards away, he flung the foolish wooden stick that he carried, saw it hit the great snout and hang there for a moment. The boar's note changed to a squeal, and it swerved aside into the covert. The pig run filled with shouting boys again. Jack came running back and poked about in the undergrowth. "Through here! But he'd do us! Through here!" I said. The boar was floundering away from them. They found another pig run parallel to the first, and Jack raced away. Ralph was full of fright and apprehension and pride. "I hit him. The spear stuck in. Now they came unexpectedly to an open space by the sea. Jack cast about on the bare rock and looked anxious. "He's gone." "I hit him," said Ralph again, "and the spear stuck in a bit." He felt the need of witnesses. "Didn't you see me?" Morris nodded. "I saw you right bang on his snout. Whee!" Ralph talked on excitedly. "I hit him all right. The spear stuck in. I wounded him." He sunned himself in their new respect and felt that hunting was good after all. "I walloped him properly. That was the beast, I think." Jack came back. "That wasn't the beast. That was a boar. I hit him." "Why didn't you grab him? I tried..." Ralph's voice ran up. "But a boar!" Jack flushed suddenly. "You said he'd do us. What did you want to throw for? Why didn't you wait?" He held out his arm. "Look." He turned his left forearm for them all to see. On the outside was a rip, not much, but bloody. "He did that with his tusks. I couldn't get my spear down in time." Attention focused on Jack. "That's a wound," said Simon, "and you ought to suck it, like Berengaria." Jack sucked. "I hit him," said Ralph indignantly. "I hit him with my spear. I wounded him." He tried for their attention. "He was coming along the path. I threw like this." Robert snarled at him. Ralph entered into the play, and everybody laughed. Presently they were all jabbing at Robert, who made mock rushes. Jack shouted, "Make a ring!" The circle moved in and round. Robert squealed in mock terror, then in real pain. "Oh, stop it! You're hurting!" The butt end of a spear fell on his back as he blundered among them. "Hold him!" They got his arms and legs. Ralph, carried away by a sudden thick excitement, grabbed Eric's spear and jabbed at Robert with it. "Kill him! Kill him!" All at once Robert was screaming and struggling with the strength of frenzy. Jack had him by the hair and was brandishing his knife. Behind him was Roger, fighting to get close. The chant rose ritually, as at the last moment of a dance or a hunt. "Kill the pig! Cut his throat! Kill the pig! Bash him in!" Ralph, too, was fighting to get near, to get a handful of that brown, vulnerable flesh. The desire to squeeze and hurt was overmastering. Jack's arm came down. The heaving circle cheered and made pig-dying noises. Then they lay quiet, panting, listening to Robert's frightened snivels. He wiped his face with a dirty arm and made an effort to retrieve his status. "Oh, my bum!" He rubbed his rump ruefully. Jack rolled over. "That was a good game." "Just a game," said Ralph uneasily. "I got jolly badly hurt at Rugger once." "We ought to have a drum," said Morris. "Then we could do it properly." Ralph looked at him. "How, properly?" "I don't know. You want a fire, I think, and a drum, and you keep time to the drum." "You want a pig," said Roger, "like in a real hunt." "Or someone to pretend," said Jack. "You could get someone to dress up as a pig, and then he could act, you know, pretend to knock me over and all that." "You want a real pig," said Robert, still caressing his rump, "because you've got to kill him." "Use the little un," said Jack, and everybody laughed. Ralph sat up. "Well, we shan't find what we're looking for at this rate." One by one they stood up, twitching rags into place. Ralph looked at Jack. "Now for the mountain." "Shouldn't we go back to Piggy," said Morris, "before dark?" The twins nodded like one boy. "Yes, that's right. Let's go up there in the morning." Ralph looked out and saw the sea. "We've got to start the fire again." "You haven't got Piggy's specs," said Jack, "so you can't." "Then we'll find out if the mountain's clear." Morris spoke, hesitating, not wanting to seem a funk. "Supposing the beast's up there?" Jack brandished his spear. "We'll kill it." The sun seemed a little cooler. He slashed with a spear. "What are we waiting for?" "I suppose," said Ralph, "if we keep on by the sea this way, we'll come out below the burnt bit, and then we can climb the mountain." Once more, Jack led them along by the suck and heave of the blinding sea. Once more, Ralph dreamed, letting his skilful feet deal with the difficulties of the path. Yet here his feet seemed less skilful than before. For most of the way they were forced right down to the bare rock by the water, and had to edge along between that and the dark luxuriance of the forest. There were little cliffs to be scaled, some to be used as paths, lengthy traverses where one used hands as well as feet. Here and there they could clamber over wave-wet rock, leaping across clear pools that the tide had left. They came to a gully that split the narrow foreshore like a defence. This seemed to have no bottom, and they peered awe-stricken into the gloomy crack where water gurgled. Then the wave came back, the gully boiled before them, and spray dashed up to the very creeper so that the boys were wet and shrieking. They tried the forest, but it was thick and woven like a bird's nest. In the end they had to jump, one by one, waiting till the water sank, and even so some of them got a second drenching. After that the rocks seemed to be growing impassable, so they sat for a time, letting their rags dry and watching the clipped outlines of the rollers that moved so slowly past the island. They found fruit in a haunt of bright little birds that hovered like insects. Then Ralph said they were going too slowly. He himself climbed a tree and parted the canopy and saw the square head of the mountain seeming still a great way off. Then they tried to hurry along the rocks, and Robert cut his knee quite badly, and they had to recognize that this path must be taken slowly if they were to be safe. So they proceeded after that as if they were climbing a dangerous mountain, until the rocks became an uncompromising cliff overhung with impossible jungle and falling sheer into the sea. Ralph looked at the sun critically. Early evening, after tea time at any rate. "I don't remember this cliff," said Jack, crestfallen, "so this must be the bit of the coast I missed." Ralph nodded. "Let me think." By now, Ralph had no self-consciousness in public thinking, but would treat the day's decisions as though he were playing chess. The only trouble was that he would never be a very good chess player. He thought of the Littlans and Piggy. Vividly he imagined Piggy by himself, huddled in a shelter that was silent except for the sounds of nightmare. "We can't leave the Littlans alone with Piggy, not all night." The other boys said nothing but stood round watching him. "If we went back, we should take ours." Jack cleared his throat and spoke in a queer, tight voice. "We mustn't let anything happen to Piggy, must we?" Ralph tapped his teeth with the dirty point of Eric's spear. "If we go across..." He glanced round him. "Someone's got to go across the island and tell Piggy we'll be back after dark." Bill spoke, unbelieving. "Through the forest, by himself, now?" "We can't spare more than one." Simon pushed his way to Ralph's elbow. "I'll go if you like. I don't mind, honestly." Before Ralph had time to reply, he smiled quickly, turned, and climbed into the forest. Ralph looked back at Jack, seeing him infuriatingly for the first time. "Jack, that time you went the whole way to the Castle Rock." Jack glowered. "Yes?" "You came along part of this shore, below the mountain, beyond there."
"Yes."
"And then?"
"I found a pig run. It went for miles."
Ralph nodded.
He pointed at the forest. "So the pig run must be somewhere in there."
Everybody agreed sagely.
"All right, then, we'll smash a way through till we find the pig run."
He took a step and halted.
"Wait a minute, though. Where does the pig run go to?"
"The mountain," said Jack.
"I told you."
He sneered.
"Don't you want to go to the mountain?"
Ralph sighed, sensing the rising antagonism, understanding that this was how Jack felt as soon as he ceased to lead.
"I was thinking of the light we'll be stumbling about. We were going to look for the beast. There won't be enough light."
"I don't mind going," said Jack hotly. "I'll go when we get there."
"Won't you? Would you rather go back to the shelters and tell Piggy?"
Now it was Ralph's turn to flush. But he spoke despairingly out of the new understanding that Piggy had given him.
"Why do you hate me?"
The boys stirred uneasily, as though something indecent had been said. The silence lengthened. Ralph, still hot and hurt, turned away first.
"Come on."
He led the way and set himself as by right to hack at the tangles. Jack brought up the rear, displaced and brooding. The pig track was a dark tunnel, for the sun was sliding quickly towards the edge of the world, and in the forest shadows were never far to seek. The track was broad and beaten, and they ran along at a swift trot. Then the roof of leaves broke up, and they halted, breathing quickly, looking at the few stars that pricked round the head of the mountain. There you are. The boys peered at each other doubtfully. Ralph made a decision. We'll go straight across to the platform and climb tomorrow. They murmured agreement, but Jack was standing by his shoulder. If you're frightened, of course. Ralph turned on him. Who went first on the Castle Rock?
I went too, and that was daylight.
All right. Who wants to climb the mountain now?
Silence was the only answer.
Sam and Eric, what about you?
We ought to go and tell Piggy.
Yes, tell Piggy that...
But Simon went. We ought to tell Piggy in case...
Robert? Bill?
They were going straight back to the platform now. Not, of course, that they were afraid, but tired.
Ralph turned back to Jack.
You see?
I'm going up the mountain. The words came from Jack viciously, as though they were a curse. He looked at Ralph, his thin body tensed, his spear held as if he threatened him.
I'm going up the mountain to look for the beast now.
Then the supreme sting, the casual, bitter word.
Coming?
At that word, the other boys forgot their urge to be gone and turned back to sample this fresh rub of two spirits in the dark. The word was too good, too bitter, too successfully daunting to be repeated. It took Ralph at low water, when his nerve was relaxed for the return to the shelter and the still friendly waters of the lagoon.
I don't mind.
Astonished, he heard his voice come out cool and casual, so that the bitterness of Jack's taunt fell powerless.
If you don't mind, of course.
Oh, not at all.
Jack took a step.
Well then, side by side, watched by silent boys, the two started up the mountain.
Ralph stopped.
We're silly. Why should only two go? If we find anything, two won't be enough.
There came the sound of boys scuttling away. Astonishingly, a dark figure moved against the tide.
Roger?
Yes.
That's three, then.
Once more they set out to climb the slope of the mountain. The darkness seemed to flow round them like a tide. Jack, who had said nothing, began to choke and cough, and a gust of wind set all three spluttering.
Ralph's eyes were blinded with tears.
Ashes, we're on the edge of the burnt patch.
Their footsteps and the occasional breeze were stirring up small devils of dust. Now that they stopped again, Ralph had time, while he coughed, to remember how silly they were. If there was no beast... And almost certainly there was no beast. In that case, well and good. But if there was something waiting on top of the mountain, what was the use of three of them, handicapped by the darkness and carrying only sticks?
We're being fools.
Out of the darkness came the answer.
Windy?
Irritably, Ralph shook himself. This was all Jack's fault.
Of course I am, but we're still being fools.
If you don't want to go on, said the voice sarcastically, I'll go up by myself. Ralph heard the mockery and hated Jack. The sting of ashes in his eyes, tiredness, fear enraged him.
Go on, then. We'll wait here.
There was silence.
Why don't you go? Are you frightened?
A stain in the darkness, a stain that was Jack, detached itself and began to draw away.
All right, so long.
The stain vanished. Another took its place.
Ralph felt his knee against something hard and rocked a charred trunk that was edgy to the touch.
He felt the sharp cinders that had been bark push against the back of his knee and knew that Roger had sat down. He felt with his hands and lowered himself beside Roger while the trunk rocked among invisible ashes.
Roger, uncommunicative by nature, said nothing. He offered no opinion on the beast, nor told Ralph why he had chosen to come on this mad expedition. He simply sat and rocked the trunk gently.
Ralph noticed a rapid and infuriating tapping noise and realized that Roger was banging his silly wooden stick against something.
So they sat, the rocking, tapping, impervious Roger, and Ralph fuming. Round them the close sky was loaded with stars, save where the mountain punched up a hole of blackness. There was a slithering noise high above them, the sound of someone taking giant and dangerous strides on rock or ash. Then Jack found them and was shivering and croaking in a voice they could just recognize as his. "I saw a thing on top." They heard him blunder against the trunk, which rocked violently. He lay silent for a moment, then muttered, "Keep a good lookout. It may be following." A shower of ash pattered round them. Jack sat up. "I saw a thing bulge on the mountain." "You only imagined it," said Ralph shakily, "because nothing would bulge, not any sort of creature." Roger spoke. They jumped, for they had forgotten him. "A frog." Jack giggled and shuddered. "Some frog." There was a noise, too, a kind of plop noise. Then the thing bulged. Ralph surprised himself, not so much by the quality of his voice, which was even, but by the bravado of its intention. "We'll go and look." For the first time since he had first known Jack, Ralph could feel him hesitate. "Now?" His voice spoke for him. "Of course." He got off the trunk and led the way across the clinking cinders up into the dark, and the others followed. Now that his physical voice was silent, the inner voice of reason, and other voices too, made themselves heard. Piggy was calling him a kid. Another voice told him not to be a fool, and the darkness and desperate enterprise gave the night a kind of dentist's chair unreality. As they came to the last slope, Jack and Roger drew near, changed from ink stains to distinguishable figures. By common consent, they stopped and crouched together. Behind them, on the horizon, was a patch of lighter sky where in a moment the moon would rise. The wind roared once in the forest and pushed their rags against them. Ralph stirred. "Come on." They crept forward, Roger lagging a little. Jack and Ralph turned the shoulder of the mountain together. The glittering lengths of the lagoon lay below them, and beyond that a long white smudge that was the reef. Roger joined them. Jack whispered, "Let's creep forward on hands and knees. Maybe it's asleep." Roger and Ralph moved on, this time leaving Jack in the rear for all his brave words. They came to the flat top where the rock was hard to hands and knees. A creature that bulged. Ralph put his hand in the cold, soft ashes of the fire and smothered a cry. His hand and shoulder were twitching from the unlooked-for contact. Green lights of nausea appeared for a moment and ate into the darkness. Roger lay behind him. Jack's mouth was at his ear. Over there, where there used to be a gap in the rock, a sort of hump. See? Ashes blew into Ralph's face from the dead fire. He could not see the gap or anything else, because the green lights were opening again and growing, and the top of the mountain was sliding sideways. Once more, from a distance, he heard Jack's whisper. "Scared?" Not scared so much as paralyzed, hung up here immovable on the top of a diminishing, moving mountain. Jack slid away from him. Roger bumped, fumbled with a hiss of breath, and passed onwards. He heard them whispering. "Can you see anything?" "There." In front of them, only 3 or 4 yards away, was a rock-like hump where no rock should be. Ralph could hear a tiny chattering noise coming from somewhere, perhaps from his own mouth. He bound himself together with his will, fused his fear and loathing into a hatred, and stood up. He took 2 leaden steps forward. Behind them, the sliver of moon had drawn clear of the horizon. Before them, something like a great ape was sitting asleep, with its head between its knees. Then the wind roared in the forest. There was confusion in the darkness, and the creature lifted its head, holding towards them the ruin of a face. Ralph found himself taking giant strides among the ashes, heard other creatures crying out and leaping, and dared the impossible on the dark slope. Presently,
The mountain was deserted, save for the three abandoned sticks and the thing that bowed. Chapter 8. Gift for the Darkness. Piggy looked up miserably from the dawn-pale beach to the dark mountain.
Are you sure?
Really sure, I mean.
I told you 12 times now, said Ralph. We saw it.
Do you think we're safe down here?
How the hell should I know?
Ralph jerked away from him and walked a few paces along the beach. Jack was kneeling and drawing a circular pattern in the sand with his forefinger. Piggy's voice came to them, hushed.
Are you sure? Really?
Go up and see, said Jack contemptuously, and good riddance.
No fear.
The beast had teeth, said Ralph, and big black eyes. He shuddered violently. Piggy took off his one round of glass and polished the surface.
What are we going to do?
Ralph turned towards the platform. The conch glimmered among the trees, a white blob against the place where the sun would rise. He pushed back his mop.
I don't know.
He remembered the panic flight down the mountainside.
I don't think we'd ever fight a thing that size, honestly, you know.
We'd talk, but we wouldn't fight a tiger. We'd hide. Even Jack'd hide.
Jack still looked at the sand.
What about my hunters? Simon came stealing out of the shadows by the shelters. Ralph ignored Jack's question. He pointed to the touch of yellow above the sea.
As long as there's light, we're brave enough.
But then? And now that thing squats by the fire as though it didn't want us to be rescued. He was twisting his hands now unconsciously. His voice rose.
So we can't have a signal fire.
We're beaten. A point of gold appeared above the sea, and at once all the sky lightened.
What about my hunters?
Boys armed with sticks. Jack got to his feet. His face was red as he marched away. Piggy put on his one glass and looked at Ralph.
Now you've done it. You've been rude about his hunters.
Oh, shut up. The sound of the inexpertly blown conch interrupted them. As though he were serenading the rising sun, Jack went on blowing till the shelters were astir and the hunters crept to the platform and the littlins whimpered as now they so frequently did. Ralph rose obediently and Piggy, and they went to the platform.
Talk, said Ralph bitterly. Talk, talk, talk.
He took the conch from Jack. This meeting, Jack interrupted him. I called it.
If you hadn't called it, I should have. You just blew the conch.
Well, isn't that... Oh, take it, go on, talk. Ralph thrust the conch into Jack's arms and sat down on the trunk.
I've called an assembly, said Jack, because of a lot of things. First, you know now we've seen the beast. We crawled up. We were only a few feet away. The beast sat up and looked at us. I don't know what it does. We don't even know what it is. The beast comes out of the sea, out of the dark. Trees. Quiet, shouted Jack. You listen. The beast is sitting up there, whatever it is.
Perhaps it's waiting. Hunting.
Yes, hunting.
Hunting, said Jack. He remembered his age-old tremors in the forest.
Yes, the beast is a hunter. Only,
shut up.
The next thing is that we couldn't kill it. And the next thing is, Ralph said, my hunters are no good.
I never said that.
I've got the conch.
Ralph thinks you're cowards, running away from the boar and the beast. And that's not all.
There was a kind of sigh on the platform, as if everyone knew what was coming.
Jack's voice went on, tremulous yet determined, pushing against the uncooperative silence.
He's like Piggy. He says things like Piggy. He isn't a proper chief.
Jack clutched the conch to him. He's a coward himself.
For a moment he paused and then went on.
On top, when Roger and me went on, he stayed back.
I went too.
After. The two boys glared at each other through screens of hair.
I went on too, said Ralph. Then I ran away.
So did you.
Call me a coward, then.
Jack turned to the hunters.
He's not a hunter. He'd never have got us meat. He isn't a prefect, and we don't know anything about him. He just gives orders and expects people to obey for nothing. All this talk, shouted Ralph. Talk, talk. Who wanted it? Who called the meeting? Jack turned, red in the face, his chin sunk back. He glowered up under his eyebrows. All right, then, he said in tones of deep meaning and menace. All right. He held the conch against his chest with one hand and stabbed the air with his index finger. Who thinks Ralph oughtn't to be chief? He looked expectantly at the boys ranged round, who had frozen. Under the palms there was deadly silence. Hands up, said Jack strongly. Whoever wants Ralph not to be chief. The silence continued, breathless and heavy and full of shame. Slowly the red drained from Jack's cheeks, then came back with a painful rush. He licked his lips and turned his head at an angle, so that his gaze avoided the embarrassment of linking with another's eye. How many think? His voice tailed off. The hands that held the conch shook. He cleared his throat and spoke loudly. All right, then. He laid the conch with great care in the grass at his feet. The humiliating tears were running from the corner of each eye. I'm not going to play any longer. Not with you. Most of the boys were looking down now at the grass or their feet. Jack cleared his throat again. I'm not going to be a part of Ralph's lot. He looked along the right-hand logs, numbering the hunters that had been a choir. I'm going off by myself. He can catch his own pigs. Anyone who wants to hunt when I do can come too. He blundered out of the triangle towards the drop to the white sand. Jack! Jack turned and looked back at Ralph. For a moment he paused, and then cried out, high-pitched, enraged, No! He leapt down from the platform and ran along the beach, paying no heed to the steady fall of his tears, and until he dived into the forest, Ralph watched him. Piggy was indignant. I've been talking, Ralph, and you just stood there like... Softly, looking at Piggy and not seeing him, Ralph spoke to himself. He'll come back. When the sun goes down, he'll come. He looked at the conch in Piggy's hand. What? Well, there. Piggy gave up the attempt to rebuke Ralph. He polished his glass again and went back to his subject. We can do without Jack, Merridew. There's others beside him on this island. But now we really got a beast, though I can't hardly believe it, we'll need to stay close to the platform. There'll be less need of him and his hunting. So now we can really decide on what's what. There's no help, Piggy. Nothing to be done. For a while they sat in depressed silence. Then Simon stood up and took the conch from Piggy, who was so astonished that he remained on his feet. Ralph looked up at Simon. Simon? What is it this time? A half-sound of jeering ran round the circle, and Simon shrank from it. I thought there might be something to do, something we... Again the pressure of the assembly took his voice away. He sought for help and sympathy and chose Piggy. He turned half towards him, clutching the conch to his brown chest. I think we ought to climb the mountain. The circle shivered with dread. Simon broke off and turned to Piggy, who was looking at him with an expression of derisive incomprehension. What's the good of climbing up to this here beast when Ralph and the other two couldn't do nothing? Simon whispered his answer. What else is there to do? His speech made, he allowed Piggy to lift the conch out of his hands. Then he retired and sat as far away from the others as possible. Piggy was speaking now with more assurance, and with what, if the circumstances had not been so serious, the others would have recognized as pleasure. I said we could all do without a certain person. Now I say we got to decide on what can be done, and I think I could tell you what Ralph's going to say next. The most important thing on the island is the smoke, and you can't have no smoke without a fire. Ralph made a restless movement. No go, Piggy, we got no fire. That thing sits up there, we'll have to stay here. Piggy lifted the conch as though to add power to his next words. We got no fire on the mountain, but what's wrong with the fire down here?
A fire could be built on them rocks, on the sand even. We'd make smoke just the same.
That's right, smoke, by the bathing pool.
The boys began to babble. Only Piggy could have the intellectual daring to suggest moving the fire from the mountain.
So we'll have the fire down here, said Ralph.
He looked about him. We can build it just here, between the bathing pool and the platform. Of course... He broke off, frowning, thinking the thing out, unconsciously tugging at the stub of a nail with his teeth. Of course the smoke won't show so much, not be seen so far away, but we needn't go near the...
The others nodded in perfect comprehension. There would be no need to go near.
We'll build the fire now.
The greatest ideas are the simplest. Now there was something to be done, they worked with passion. Piggy was so full of delight and expanding liberty in Jack's departure, so full of pride in his contribution to the good of society, that he helped to fetch wood. The wood he fetched was close at hand, a fallen tree on the platform that they did not need for the assembly. Yet to the others the sanctity of the platform had protected even what was useless there. Then the twins realized they would have a fire near them as a comfort in the night, and this set a few little ones dancing and clapping hands. The wood was not so dry as the fuel they had used on the mountain. Much of it was damply rotten and full of insects that scurried. Logs had to be lifted from the soil with care, or they crumbled into sodden powder. More than this, in order to avoid going deep into the forest, the boys worked near at hand on any fallen wood, no matter how tangled with new growth. The skirts of the forest and the scar were familiar, near the conch and the shelters, and sufficiently friendly in daylight. What they might become in darkness, nobody cared to think. They worked, therefore, with great energy and cheerfulness, though as time crept by, there was a suggestion of panic in the energy and hysteria in the cheerfulness. They built a pyramid of leaves and twigs, branches and logs, on the bare sand by the platform. For the first time on the island, Piggy himself removed his one glass, knelt down and focused the sun on tinder. And soon there was a ceiling of smoke and a bush of yellow flame. The little ones, who had seen few fires since the first catastrophe, became wildly excited. They danced and sang, and there was a partyish air about the gathering. At last Ralph stopped work and stood up, smudging the sweat from his face with a dirty forearm. We'll have to have a small fire. This one's too big to keep up. Piggy sat down carefully on the sand and began to polish his glass. We could experiment. We could find out how to make a small hot fire and then put green branches on to make smoke. Some of them leaves must be better for that than the others. As the fire died down, so did the excitement. The little ones stopped singing and dancing and drifted away towards the sea or the fruit trees or the shelters. Ralph flopped down in the sand. We'll have to make a new list of who's to look after the fire. If you can find them. He looked round. Then, for the first time, he saw how few big ones there were and understood why the work had been so hard. Where's Morris? Piggy wiped his glass again.
I expect...
No, he wouldn't go into the forest by himself, would he?
Ralph jumped up, ran swiftly round the fire, and stood by Piggy, holding up his hair.
But we've got to have a list. There's you and me and Sam and Eric and...
He would not look at Piggy, but spoke casually.
Where's Bill and Roger?
Piggy leaned forward and put a fragment of wood on the fire.
I expect they've gone. I expect they won't play either.
Ralph sat down and began to poke little holes in the sand. He was surprised to see that one had a drop of blood by it. He examined his bitten nail closely and watched the little globe of blood that gathered where the quick was gnawed away. Piggy went on speaking.
I seen them stealing off when we was gathering wood. They went that way, the same way as he went himself.
Ralph finished his inspection and looked up into the air. The sky, as if in sympathy with the great changes among them, was different today, and so misty that in some places the hot air seemed white. The disk of the sun was dull silver,
as though it were nearer and not so hot, yet the air stifled. "They always been making trouble, haven't they?" The voice came near his shoulder and sounded anxious. "We can do without 'em. We'll be happier now, won't we?" Ralph sat. The twins came, dragging a great log and grinning in their triumph. They dumped the log among the embers so that sparks flew. "We can do all right on our own, can't we?" For a long time, while the log dried, caught fire, and turned red hot, Ralph sat in the sand and said nothing. He did not see Piggy go to the twins and whisper with them, nor how the three boys went together into the forest. "Here you are." He came to himself with a jolt. Piggy and the other two were by him. They were laden with fruit. "I thought, perhaps," said Piggy, "we ought to have a feast, kind of." The three boys sat down. They had a great mass of the fruit with them, and all of it properly ripe. They grinned at Ralph as he took some and began to eat. "Thanks," he said. Then, with an accent of pleased surprise, "Thanks." "Do all right on our own," said Piggy. "It's them that haven't no common sense that makes trouble on this island. We'll make a little hot fire." Ralph remembered what had been worrying him. "Where's Simon?" "I don't know." "You don't think he's climbing the mountain?" Piggy broke into noisy laughter and took more fruit. "He might be." He gulped his mouthful. "He's cracked." Simon had passed through the area of fruit trees, but today the Littlands had been too busy with the fire on the beach, and they had not pursued him there. He went on among the creepers until he reached the great mat that was woven by the open space and crawled inside. Beyond the screen of leaves, the sunlight pelted down, and the butterflies danced in the middle their unending dance. He knelt down, and the arrow of the sun fell on him. That other time, the air had seemed to vibrate with heat, but now it threatened. Soon the sweat was running from his long, coarse hair. He shifted restlessly, but there was no avoiding the sun. Presently he was thirsty, and then very thirsty. He continued to sit. Far off along the beach, Jack was standing before a small group of boys. He was looking brilliantly happy. "Hunting," he said. He sized them up. Each of them wore the remains of a black cap, and ages ago they had stood in two demure rows, and their voices had been the song of angels. "We'll hunt. I'm going to be chief." They nodded, and the crisis passed easily. And then, about the beast. They moved, looked at the forest. "I say this. We aren't going to bother about the beast." He nodded at them. "We're going to forget the beast." "That's right, yes, forget the beast." If Jack was astonished by their fervour, he did not show it. "And another thing. We shan't dream so much down here. This is near the end of the island." They agreed passionately out of the depths of their tormented private lives. "Now listen. We might go later to the Castle Rock, but now I'm going to get more of the biggins away from the conch and all that. We'll kill a pig and give a feast." He paused and went on more slowly. "And about the beast, when we kill, we'll leave some of the kill for it. Then it won't bother us, maybe." He stood up abruptly. "We'll go into the forest now and hunt." He turned and trotted away, and after a moment they followed him obediently. They spread out nervously in the forest. Almost at once, Jack found the dug and scattered roots that told of pig, and soon the track was fresh. Jack signalled the rest of the hunt to be quiet and went forward by himself. He was happy and wore the damp darkness of the forest like his old clothes. He crept down a slope to rocks and scattered trees by the sea. The pigs lay, bloated bags of fat, sensuously enjoying the shadows under the trees. There was no wind and they were unsuspicious, and practice had made Jack silent as the shadows. He stole away again and instructed his hidden hunters. Presently they all began to inch forward, sweating in the silence and heat. Under the trees, an ear flapped idly. A little apart from the rest, sunk in deep maternal bliss,
lay the largest sow of the lot. She was black and pink, and the great bladder of her belly was fringed with a row of piglets that slept or burrowed and squeaked. 15 yards from the drove, Jack stopped, and his arm, straightening, pointed at the sow. He looked round in inquiry to make sure that everyone understood, and the other boys nodded at him. The row of right arms slid back. Now. The drove of pigs started up, and at a range of only 10 yards, the wooden spears with fire-hardened points flew towards the chosen pig. One piglet, with a demented shriek, rushed into the sea, trailing Roger's spear behind it. The sow gave a gasping squeal and staggered up, with two spears sticking in her fat flank. The boys shouted and rushed forward. The piglets scattered, and the sow burst the advancing line and went crashing away through the forest. After her. They raced along the pig track, but the forest was too dark and tangled, so that Jack, cursing, stopped them and cast among the trees. Then he said nothing for a time, but breathed fiercely so that they were awed by him, and looked at each other in uneasy admiration. Presently he stabbed down at the ground with his finger. There. Before the others could examine the drop of blood, Jack had swerved off, judging a trace, touching a bow that gave. So he followed, mysteriously right and assured, and the hunters trod behind him. He stopped before a covert. In there. They surrounded the covert, but the sow got away with the sting of another spear in her flank. The trailing butts hindered her, and the sharp cross-cut points were a torment. She blundered into a tree, forcing a spear still deeper, and after that any of the hunters could follow her easily by the drops of vivid blood. The afternoon wore on, hazy and dreadful with damp heat. The sow staggered her way ahead of them, bleeding and mad, and the hunters followed, wedded to her in lust, excited by the long chase and the dropped blood. They could see her now, nearly got up with her, but she spurted with her last strength and held ahead of them again. They were just behind her when she staggered into an open space where bright flowers grew and butterflies danced round each other, and the air was hot and still. Here, struck down by the heat, the sow fell, and the hunters hurled themselves at her. This dreadful eruption from an unknown world made her frantic. She squealed and bucked, and the air was full of sweat and noise and blood and terror. Roger ran round the heap, prodding with his spear whenever pig flesh appeared. Jack was on top of the sow, stabbing downward with his knife. Roger found a lodgment for his point, and began to push, till he was leaning with his whole weight. The spear moved forward inch by inch, and the terrified squealing became a high-pitched scream. Then Jack found the throat, and the hot blood spouted over his hands. The sow collapsed under them, and they were heavy and fulfilled upon her. The butterflies still danced, preoccupied, in the centre of the clearing. At last the immediacy of the kill subsided. The boys drew back, and Jack stood up, holding out his hands. Look! He giggled and flinked them, while the boys laughed at his reeking palms. Then Jack grabbed Morris and rubbed the stuff over his cheeks. Roger began to withdraw his spear, and the boys noticed it for the first time. Robert stabilized the thing in a phrase which was received uproariously. Right up her arse! Did you hear? Did you hear what he said? Right up her arse! This time Robert and Morris acted the two parts, and Morris's acting of the pig's efforts to avoid the advancing spear was so funny that the boys cried with laughter. At length even this palled. Jack began to clean his bloody hands on the rock. Then he started work on the sow and paunched her, lugging out the hot bags of coloured guts, pushing them into a pile on the rock while the others watched him. He talked as he worked. We'll take the meat along the beach. I'll go back to the platform and invite them to a feast. That should give us time. Roger spoke. Chief?
Uh-huh.
How can we make a fire? Jack squatted back and frowned at the pig. We'll raid them and take fire.
There must be four of you. Henry and you, Bill and Morris. We'll put on paint and sneak up. Roger can snatch a branch while I say what I want. The rest of you can get this back to where we were. We'll build the fire there. And after that..." He paused and stood up, looking at the shadows under the trees. His voice was lower when he spoke again. "But we'll leave part of the kill for..." He knelt down again and was busy with his knife. The boys crowded round him. He spoke over his shoulder to Roger. "Sharpen a stick at both ends." Presently he stood up, holding the dripping sow's head in his hands. "Where's that stick?" "Here." "Ram one end in the earth." "Oh, it's rock. Jab it in that crack. There." Jack held up the head and jammed the soft throat down on the pointed end of the stick, which pierced through into the mouth. He stood back and the head hung there, a little blood dribbling down the stick. Instinctively the boys drew back too, and the forest was very still. They listened, and the loudest noise was the buzzing of flies over the spilled guts. Jack spoke in a whisper. "Pick up the pig." Morris and Robert skewered the carcass, lifted the dead weight, and stood ready. In the silence, and standing over the dry blood, they looked suddenly furtive. Jack spoke loudly. "This head is for the beast. It's a gift." The silence accepted the gift and awed them. The head remained there, dim-eyed, grinning faintly, blood blackening between the teeth. All at once they were running away as fast as they could through the forest towards the open beach. Simon stayed where he was, a small brown image concealed by the leaves. Even if he shut his eyes, the sow's head still remained like an after-image. The half-shut eyes were dim with the infinite cynicism of adult life. They assured Simon that everything was a bad business. "I know that." Simon discovered that he had spoken aloud. He opened his eyes quickly, and there was the head grinning amusedly in the strange daylight, ignoring the flies, the spilled guts, even ignoring the indignity of being spiked on a stick. He looked away, licking his dry lips. A gift for the beast. Might not the beast come for it? The head, he thought, appeared to agree with him. "Run away," said the head silently. "Go back to the others." "It was a joke, really. Why should you bother? You were just wrong, that's all. A little headache, something you ate, perhaps." "Go back, child," said the head, silently. Simon looked up, feeling the weight of his wet hair, and gazed at the sky. Up there for once were clouds, great bulging towers that sprouted away over the island, grey and cream and copper-coloured. The clouds were sitting on the land. They squeezed, produced, moment by moment, this close, tormenting heat. Even the butterflies deserted the open space where the obscene thing grinned and dripped. Simon lowered his head, carefully keeping his eyes shut, then sheltered them with his hand. There were no shadows under the trees, but everywhere a pearly stillness, so that what was real seemed elusive and without definition. The pile of guts was a black blob of flies that buzzed like a saw. After a while these flies found Simon. Gorged, they alighted by his runnels of sweat and drank. They tickled under his nostrils and played leapfrog on his thighs. They were black and iridescent green and without number. And in front of Simon, the Lord of the Flies hung on his stick and grinned. At last Simon gave up and looked back, saw the white teeth and dim eyes, the blood, and his gaze was held by that ancient, inescapable recognition. In Simon's right temple, a pulse began to beat on the brain.